Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we, you know, want to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. And let me ask you, Sheikh Javid, this question about khums. Every business person needs to start up his business with some amount of money that we call capital or asset, right?
Yes.
To begin the business with. So is this capital or asset subject to khums?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Generally speaking, if a year runs over your asset, you can call it capital. Khums should be paid from it. Even if you are working, if you are using the capital to run your business, okay, khums should be paid on it. And there are other examples I can give you. For example, if you are driving a taxi and you are not using the taxi to carry your family members, your family members, you just drive, just like people in the United States of America, they have their Uber and they just pick up passengers from the streets, okay, take them from one place to another place. So they are drivers.
Yes.
They have their Uber car and, of course, they have to pay khums on.
You mean their car is used as a means
as
of
a means
their
for
business.
Earning.
Earning.
Earning, yes. As a means for earning. Like, for example, if you got a tractor,
yes,
and you use that tractor to plow the lands of other people, and you just use the tractor to have to generate your own income.
Right.
This is an example to make our audience understand the example.
Exactly.
Yes. So His Eminence is of the view that khums should be paid on the capital, on this asset. The car or the tractor or the money that you use is your asset. It is your capital. And you use that capital to generate income, to make more money, okay, you have to pay khums on it.
But the same story could be rephrased this way. I mean, like you said, the same amount of money as we call capital or asset,
yes,
to begin the business with, well, is used as a means of earning, as you said,
yes,
or livelihood, right? But the same amount of money which is earned from this capital is used to support the family with.
Yeah.
So you're
income,
using the capital for your own family.
You're
so
right.
You're using it. So it shouldn't be subject to khums then.
The example, it's somehow misunderstood by some people. Okay, the way you explain, many people might have the same idea as you do.
Exactly.
I would say that, okay, you generate the income and you make money. The money is, both the capital and the income that is generated is yours, okay? So if the profit you made exceeds the annual expenses of yourself and your family, you have to pay khums from the excess, from the surplus amount, right?
The surplus amount of the capital earning?
Of the earning.
Uh-huh.
Of the earning.
But
right?
What about the capital?
The capital is assumed, as we assume that the khums has already been paid on the capital, right?
I see.
And the income, if it exceeds the annual expenditure of yourself and your family, you have to pay khums from the surplus.
I see.
Right. And I think you are under the impression that, okay, since the capital is used, so it is something used. And we don't pay khums from something that is used.
Exactly.
That's not the case.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's not like chair. It's not like, for example, the books or clothes that you wear, the coat that you wear, the handkerchief. These are used objects. Khums is not payable on used objects. Something that is used, you have used it within the first year. Within the first year.
Uh-huh.
If you buy something from the market, a piece of clothing or a pair of shoes, and you use them within the first year, khums is not payable on them.
I see. Thank you very much, Javid, for the clarification. It was a very nice, in fact, enlightening answer. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on iranradio.ir. Stay with us.
The The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/Ian. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program, Islamic Laws, on Iran Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Shahzad, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Shahzad, if a temporary marriage contract is concluded for a long time, let's say 99 years, is it still valid or considered as kind of temporary marriage or ruled as a permanent contract?
Well, according to the fatwa issued by His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khomeini, it doesn't make sense to fix the period of temporary marriage for such a long period of time, let's say 99 years. And in general, the validity of a long-term temporary marriage is problematic, as the example you gave.
Mm.
Because there is no possibility that the couple survive until that time. You know, the couple is already, let's say, 20 years. And 99 years, they are not going to live. And generally speaking, it's not possible for them to live for such a long years, for so many years, like 99 years. So it is problematic. It's a matter of objection.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's a matter of ishkal, then it means that the validity of such a type of marriage, it's not going to be permanent marriage either.
Mm.
It's not, because the time is fixed, so it's not going to change into permanent marriage. So it's problematic.
I see. But if we reduce, for example, the number of years to 50 years,
that's okay.
Because, is it okay?
Yeah, why not? That's okay. 50 years is okay because it is, people live more than 50 years. They live 60 years, 70 years. Okay, even 60, 70, it's okay.
Yes. I see.
But it
but
should
for
not...
temporary marriage.
Yeah,
I mean,
temporary.
Like, it's not really sensible.
If it exceeds beyond the normal span of your life, what's the normal span? You are going to live for 70 years or 80 years at the most, okay? So if it exceeds the normal span of your life, then it is going to be problematic.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take another break and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, after the break. Stay with us.
اللهم صل على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Sheikh Javid, let me ask you a very general question, and then there are some sub-questions under it. You know, it's talking about, it's somehow related to a dead fetus.
Yes.
Due to the genetic problem, the fetus has become dehydrated and immobile. And the mother, despite the effort and spending money to preserve the fetus, was forced to abort it by a specialist doctor. In this case, is it the mother's responsibility or Sharia duty to make ghusl or to do the ghusl of the dead body? One. And two, are parents to pay blood money or to do any act like that?
Well, first of all, ghusl is obligatory on the mother for two reasons. One, and there are two causes of ghusl. The first cause is because of the bleeding. We call it nifas.
Yes.
Okay, the woman has discharged blood, she has given birth to a dead fetus,
mm-hmm.
and she has to observe, she has to perform ghusl for that reason. Another reason is that the fetus is dead, okay? And ghusl for touching a dead body becomes obligatory. Every mother that gives birth to a dead child must observe ghusl, must perform ghusl for touching a dead body, because when the dead body was given birth to, then it came into contact with the body of the mother. The mother has to perform ghusl for touching a dead body. That is then another thing. So when it comes to the abortion, okay, I should say that if according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, if the fetus is at least 4 months old and is aborted dead, it is necessary for the mother to make ghusl for touching the dead body. This is a summary of the answer given by His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei. He has to, it's necessary for the mother to make ghusl for touching the dead body of the fetus, but if it died after abortion, it is not necessary for her to make ghusl for touching it. But of course, there is another ghusl, and that ghusl is the ghusl of nifas, because she gave birth to a dead fetus and she discharged blood. That's in it.
Yes.
And when it comes to abortion, of course, if the fetus has a soul, then due to obligatory caution, as a measure of obligatory precaution, the person who causes the abortion must pay the blood money. I mean, the person who was directly involved and who was actually who carried out the abortion. Maybe it is the doctor, maybe it is the father, and maybe it's the mother who took pills and caused the baby to die inside the womb.
What about who orders it?
And the person who orders is not responsible.
Liable.
Yeah, he's not liable. Okay.
I see.
And usually it is the doctor who carries out the abortion and carries out the...
Very quick question, Sheikh Ahmed, squeezing related to the first item of this question. I mean, you said that whoever touches, and usually the mother touches the dead fetus, and then she has to actually make ghusl, right?
Yes.
But what about the situation or the scenario where they are wearing gloves and they don't touch their body with bare hand?
The mother, of course, should perform ghusl because she gives birth to it. She does not wear gloves at that time.
Yes.
And that doesn't make sense.
But what about the doctors?
But the people, the doctors, of course, they wear gloves. And ghusl does not become obligatory on them. Yes, because as long as there is a barrier.
Barrier or covering?
Yeah, yes. Ghusl does not become obligatory.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to your program, Islamic Laws, on Iran Radio with me, Muhammad Javad. Hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker, and the rest of the crew, we wish you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا